And I am very glad to call Ido Amit. I think everyone knows Ido Amit. He's an immunologist working at the Weizmann Institute in Israel, and he is the pioneer of the analysis of gene expression and other factors at the single cell level in many tissues, leading to many discoveries about the physiology of the immune system and about its involvement in many pathological processes, including cancer. So thank you very much, Ido, for your presentation.
So thank you, Alan, for the invitation. It's well worth the 2 years of waiting. You hear me well? No? Okay, now better. Okay, great. All right. So I want to discuss with you some of the advances of single-cell genomics and how they can really impact our understanding of immuno-oncology. I'd like to say or put an emphasis that I think where we're going and where we want to move with these technologies is the ability to really have very large patient cohorts with all of the metadata and including multiple layers of genomic information with an emphasis on the single cell level. So I think this is where we're heading very fast. This would really allow us to generate relevant models that can explain why do some patients respond to the treatments, why do others not respond, what is the mechanism behind all this. And obviously, the hope is this will lead to new approaches to treat cancer and other immune-related diseases. I'd just like to highlight two works that we started going on this path. The numbers of patients are still small, at least an order of magnitude smaller than we would like. But they still allowed us to really identify the relevant cell types and mechanisms that can explain the response of some patients to a treatment and the non-response of other patients. For example, in this work, we've looked at a multiple myeloma patient receiving first-line therapy and could really identify the patients that are irresponsive to the treatments and what are the mechanisms behind the signatures, obviously, but what are the mechanisms behind this, really going to a specific pathway and a specific gene involved in this resistance of these multiple myeloma patients to first-line therapy. Now, if you think about clinical trials in the setting of immunotherapy and you see that, you know, post-PD-1 we have a lot of challenges to improve or get beyond where we are today, and I think a lot of it has to do with this inability to really understand how our treatments work and which patient would really benefit from the treatment. And I think there's much more to do on this path, especially when we combine the clinical trial with such high-resolution measurements, and this is where we're really pushing. The other direction is diseases where we really don't have any treatment that does significant benefit, and one of them is scleroderma, which is an autoimmune disease, where we show that the understanding of what is really perturbed in these patients is far from being optimal, and identify new components, and actually in this case it was, we expected immune cells to be a major component perturbed in these patients, but observed that actually it's different subsets of fibroblasts, and this is progressing towards very interesting and unexpected directions. And I think Philip wonderfully showed how he used single cell to identify the different contribution of CD4 versus CD8 CARs. I think, you know, if you consider this field, it's actually an extremely young field, but developing very rapidly, and it can really impact our basic understanding of immuno-oncology and push forward for both improvement of the current treatments as well as development of new treatments. And really, this is we've been only there for 10 years, and one can see the establishment of many new techniques looking at different layers of information. It started from the RNA because that's a very important component of identifying the cellular phenotype, but progressing to many other different components, such as the chromatin, which is extremely important and getting a lot of ground. Looking at signaling, as I'll show you, spatial transcriptomic is highly important. Still in the very beginning, there's a lot of challenges on both the technological platform, which are far from being optimal, as well as the analysis of such data that we are far from reaching its full potential, but I'll show you some progress that we are making on this front. And again, as I mentioned, I think where we hope to go is the ability to collect all of these different layers of information from clinical data, optimally in cases where we have a perturbed system, so clinical trials where we actually are giving the drugs to patients before and after treatment, and building such maps and having a consensus dictionary, which we're not there yet, and I hope we move to a consensus dictionary that people do not talk about clusters, but actually we represent the same type of common nomenclature that we have for marker-based immune cells. We will have the same for single-cell data, and that would really allow us to communicate on the same population and understand better and have the data more transparent across the different sites that are collecting it or different labs and so on. And there is a lot of really potential for this to enhance the field. So this is one aspect how we can really improve the way we collect data and understand the perturbation of various immune subsets across different subclasses of patients across different tumor types. The other direction that we're very excited about is to use this on animal models to understand potentially the MOA, even on the classical immunotherapies that I would argue that we don't fully understand how they work, and understanding how they really work, their exact mechanism, both the cell type they act on and how they modify them, would allow us to improve the way we select the patients which are relevant and perhaps develop the next generation that will be really more effective. So one of our basic ideas is to basically use the human profiles, which is the truth, the real perturbation or molecular perturbation of immune cells when they enter the tumor site. And I have to say, to our surprise, there is very significant conservation of the immune phenotype across a tumor site. It's not that every tumor has a completely different immune subset, whether it's the lymphoid or the myeloid, but actually these programs are extremely conserved, as we would expect from the fact that the immune cells are responding to the tumor sites, which are by and large activating very similar signaling cascade. And they're quite conserved also across the patient. Obviously, there are different contribution of various populations, but by and large, you see the same population of immune cells across the patients and across the tumors. And what this allows us to do, if we go to the molecular level, okay, we are not trying to say that the animal models are representing the exact human biology. It's very different, especially that we work mostly on syngeneic tumors. They're very different. They grow up fast. They're not the human disease. But if we start to look at the immune phenotypes and immune trajectories, we can identify tumors that are representing the same molecular perturbation that we identify in the patient. And then I think it's legitimate to ask, what is the molecule that we are using or developing? What is it really affecting within these different compartments? And I think then we can start to think about relating this to the human disease and thinking about how we can best introduce it or develop the molecule. And this can enhance a lot of the work that we're doing, both on new molecules thinking about combination therapies, when is it actually beneficial to combine two molecules? When do you, on the molecular level, when do you get effects that are really synergizing with one another? And I think this will allow us to improve kind of this thinking of how do we combine therapies? When are they really beneficial when we add them? Because, you know, looking just at the clinical trials that are ongoing with PD-1, it seems that everybody is pulling their favorite molecule and trying to combine it without really thinking about how do we generate a hypothesis-driven and then data-driven approach for such development. So I'll show you some of our efforts, some of the data we are seeing. There's obviously always a question of mouse to human. So, you know, if you ask me at the end, I would not know what to answer about this. We are trying to show that what we are finding in mouse is relevant to human, but obviously that will remain an open and challenging question. So one of the molecules we've been working on is the classical CTLA-4. The first immunotherapy, and looking, and we collaborate with Sergio Quisada, which basically showed that anti-CTLA-4 work optimally when they have an effector function, when they have an active Fc gamma receptor engagement. And they hardly work at all when you have just a blocking antibody. Okay, so this was already shown. But how does it work is not really clear. The suggestion that Sergio put forward and other people identify, again, with the question whether it's a mouse phenomenon or also happen in human, is that this is mainly depleting Tregs, which have the highest levels of CTLA-4 within tumor. So we started profiling very deeply. Mice, large number of mice is needed for this in order to get the proper statistics with these different anti-CTLA-4 molecules and generating the tumor environment composed of obviously both lymphoid and myeloid components. What one immediately observes, so this is the control molecule, this is the M1 molecule, which is basically almost identical to the control. One observes that, similar to the effects that one sees on tumor growth, there is very significant effects on the immune compartment within the tumor. The one effect is, again, what Sergio already identified is this very significant depletion of the Tregs, which are over here, which are almost completely gone, or 75% are depleted with the M2A molecule. And of course, this is tumor-specific. If you look with the same approaches in peripheral immune organ, spleen, tumor lymph nodes, and so on, one does not see this effect, obviously, because CTLA-4 is mainly expressed on Tregs which enter the tumor site. The other very dominant effect, if one looks, is the changes in the myeloid compartment, and this is mainly neutrophils which are infiltrating in very large quantities. And we wanted to ask if this has any significant function, or this is just a byproduct of the late inflammation that one has in the tumor after so many days of treatment. And what we've seen that if we deplete neutrophils using antibody and other approaches, one basically has sees no effect. So the tumor efficacy of M2A remains the same whether you have or you deplete neutrophil by and large. So this raised a question to us. So maybe actually looking so late in the process where there's already inflammation and secondary effects is not the appropriate time to really understand how and what are the major mechanisms of this molecule. And so we started looking at different time points. I'm going to show you very early time point, 24 hours after treatment, again, using the similar approach. And what we see are two major effects. I don't want to see you to show you additional maps to confuse you, but we see two major effects. Again, this very strong depletion of Tregs, which is occurring within 8 hours or so. And then we see a very dramatic modulation of the macrophage compartment. So we are seeing a very strong switch, and this is 24 hours after the treatment, from these inhibitory TAM macrophages to more inflammatory monocytes. If one looks closely at what are the changes, one really observed a very strong upregulation of type 1 interferon signaling within these monocytes, which are dramatically changing in the tumor. So that brought to us two questions. So what is really the most important aspect here? Is it these depletion of Tregs? Is this what the main or maybe the only thing that's driving the tumor clearance and immune rearrangement, or is Fc gamma receptor engagement with macrophages, with TAM, because they express the highest level of Fc gamma receptor in the tumor? There's hardly any NKs in these tumors, as most of the tumors. And again, we calibrated depletion of Tregs using other approaches that will not involve Fc gamma receptor engagement, mainly using FOXP3 DTR mice. And when we deplete the Tregs within these mice, what we observe is that this does not reach the same efficacy that we observed when we do the same with the M2A, suggesting that the myeloid compartment rearrangement through this Fc gamma receptor binding also play an important role. When we look closer molecularly, again, we see that a lot of the changes, molecular changes that we observe with the M2A molecule are not visible in this case. So if you only deplete Tregs, you don't have the same type of immune rearrangements. Okay, so the Tregs alone are not sufficient to drive the both the efficacy as well as the immune rearrangement that one observes with the M2A molecule. And since we observe a very strong activation of type 1 interferon in this very early time point, we thought this may be a direct effect of the Fc gamma receptor binding. There is some work from Ravitch and others that show that Fc gamma receptor can activate directly downstream the type 1 interferon. And again, using both knockout mouse for using Fc gamma receptor knockout mouse, we see we cannot observe this immune rearrangement, but this is, I would say, expectable given that we don't see the there's no depletion of Treg. But again, what we've shown using in vitro cultures that without Fc gamma engagement, one does not observe this type 1 interferon activation, whether in wild-type cells you do. So this and another experiment show that the type 1 interferon signaling we observe in the tumor are downstream to the FCR engagement of macrophages. We went on to try to understand better the role of interferon activation in macrophages, and again, we show that this is really important for the full efficacy under M2A treatment. And in other data, I'm not showing here, we also went and showed this in vitro. So all of this put together, again, we've started to recapitulate some of this in tumor fragments. In tumor fragments, we can see the Treg depletion, but it's a bit more difficult to maintain the myeloid compartment. So There is some challenges to do such experiments in human, but I think we're seeing signs or shadows that this same mechanism is also relevant for the human biology. So I'd like to shift gears and talk a little bit about technologies and why we're really excited about where they are taking us and how they can better explain some of the phenomena of the dysfunction of the immune system within tumors. I'll mainly talk about two new technologies we are working with, and one has to do with the attempt to understand signaling between immune components within different environments and within the tumor. And obviously, this is driven a lot by many of the activity of immune phenomena are driven by signaling between one cell to another. And this is, and obviously many of the relevant checkpoint molecules are trying to enhance or block such interaction. And we, I think, lack really quantitative data around such signaling. The spatial omics is going to take us there, but it will take a lot of time to reach this type of resolution, although the pace is getting faster and faster. So we try to resolve this by developing a technology which we call PeakSeq, which allows us to basically sort and profile these rare events of interaction between subsets of cells that we care about. And this really allows us then to zoom in on these populations and start to learn how they interact and what might be the signaling involved in their interaction. And one work, I'm not going to go into this too much because it's published. It's just that it was very fun to see Miriam after we worked on this through Zoom for 2 years to see her finally in person last night. So I thought I'd just mention it. Anyway, so if you think about, you know, the single cell biology, it really allows us to understand the differences of immune cells in the tumor site versus outside of the site, and this is something that's ongoing and making a lot of progress across many sites over the world. But we are able to observe here what are the specific interactions that types of different immune cells are generating, especially focusing on T cells with different myeloid subsets. And one of the surprises that we observed in this work is this very intimate interaction between CD4, a specific subset of CD4 cells, which are similar to TFH but not identical, that interact very intimately with dendritic cells and mostly MREG dendritic cells. And going to the previous talk, what we identified are these interaction between CD4 cells, which are actually specific, as we've seen here for tumor antigen, upregulates many molecules which are associated both to immune signaling, such as interferon gamma and others, but also a dysfunction similar to what we see in CD8 cells, including PD-1 and others. And again, I'm not going to go deeper into this work because this is a myeloid session, but I think this is very interesting and very much overlapping some of the data that Philip has shown for the CD4 versus CD8 CAR. Another direction that I'm really excited about is the ability to not only observe the RNA molecules, which are definitely important to identify and characterize the different cell type very efficiently, but also going at intracellular signaling, which is highly important to identify immune function, signaling, and metabolism. And this technology that we developed really allows us to permeabilize the cells and introduce intracellular antibodies and then look at different signaling and how they relate to various immune subsets. I'll skip this since I think I'm starting to run out of time, but it just showed that the this approach is robust if one uses even the standard 10x protocol, identifying the same subsets of cells and the same molecule which are defining these subsets across different types of tissues and organisms. And what we are working very intensively on is to identify the myeloid dysfunction within tumors. And again, if one looks at these definitions, which are extremely ill-defined and really lineage vague, there are no good markers to identify the different myeloid components within the tumor. And a lot of it has to do that many of the, I would say, markers that are defining these different immune subsets are such as MDSCs are intracellular markers defining different metabolic rearrangements and so on and so forth. So we started profiling different signaling components, different metabolic enzymes using the INSEC technology, which then allows us to overlay both the signaling and the transcriptional output and start to identify what are the changes that are occurring and can we identify specific subsets that are have additional or potentially more immunosuppressive function. Long story short, this is such a map that defining the arginase 1 activity versus the various transcriptional output. And one can generate this or put this into a 2D map. And through this, we identify that in addition to the classical tumor-associated macrophages, we identify these two populations of regulatory myeloid cells, MREG1 and MREG2. And these are populations are actually extremely conserved from mouse to human. So the exact same population we can identify also in human tumors. Again, as I mentioned, for the lymphoid compartment, they are conserved across a large array of tumor types. And again, if you look at arginase 1 and other immune suppressive pathway, they express some of the highest levels of these molecules. And one of the things that was very interesting to us is and I'll go back, sorry. I'll go back to this, they express some molecules that we are very interested in, myeloid checkpoints such as TREM2, I'll go back into this in a second. But again, we are starting to compile a very large database of the spatial location of these and other immune cells within tumor. So one study that was recently published with the lab of Nir Yosef, which just joined us in the Weizmann Institute, uses an approach to both use the single cell data with at this point spatial data, which does not give you single cell resolution, but actually these are spots which give you a resolution of hundreds to thousands of cells in reality. And attempts to do what other approaches have not is not only to say there is this and this percentage of macrophages or T cell, but really define the specific subsets of macrophages that are in the spot, okay, the different subsets that I showed you earlier, or the different subsets of T cells, okay? And we were able with this approach really to identify that these MREGs, and I'll go quickly since we're out of time, these MREGs are sitting in very specific sites which contain hypoxic regions, so the tumor show various hypoxic markers, as well as very significant apoptotic cells, okay? And again, this is really aligned with some of the pathways we see that are turned on, including different hypoxic pathways and so on in the MREG cell. Going forward, again, we're very excited about the fact that these cells express very high levels of TREM2. TREM2, what we've been learning in the last 5-6 years, is a very important immune signaling hub associated to pathology. It's hardly observed in healthy macrophages. And responding to all kinds of insult, again, mainly responding to apoptotic cells, especially if there's a lot of various specific fat tissue involved in this region, but not necessarily. We went on to basically show that upon a TREM2 knockout, like we observe for other tissues such as microglia in the brain or in the adipose tissue, that these MREGs are highly dependent on TREM2 signaling. If you remove TREM2, they are by and large depleted. This makes a very large shift on the immune compartment in initiating more activation and less T-cell exhaustion and much more NK cells. And functionally, what we see is the tumor growth is very much hampered. In additional work that was back-to-back from Marco Colonna, and we have a lot of similar work, one sees that this is highly synergistic with PD-1. And again, molecules that inhibit TREM2 really initiate very robust immune remodeling and tumor ablation. So if I were just to conclude on this last part, I showed you that INSEC is a really, I think, fascinating technology which allowed you to record single-cell RNA-seq with signaling and metabolism. And through this, we resolved some of the function of TREM2 in the tumor and some of the activities it has to enhance tumor killing. And with this, I'd like to end and really thank the amazing collaborators we had around this work, and thank you for listening.